Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Text 7.
Gopi bhikshu bito dvityad. Bhagavan balavat kvachit.
Bhagavan balavat kvachit.
Udgayati kvachit mugdas.
Udgayati kvachit mugdas.
Tadvasho daru yantravat. Gopi bhikshu bito dvityad. Bhagavan balavat kvachit.
Bhagavan balavat kvachit.
Udgayati kvachit mugdas.
Udgayati kvachit mugdas.
Tadvasho daru yantravat.
Tadvasho daru yantravat.
Gopi bhikshu bito dvityad. Bhagavan balavat kvachit. Udgayati kvachit mugdas. Tadvasho daru yantravat. Gopi bhikshu bito dvityad.
Bhagavan balavat.
Bhagavan balavat kvachit.
Udgayati
kvachit mugdas.
Tadyasho
daru yantravat.
Gopi
bhikshu bito dvityad.
Bhagavan balavat kvachit.
Bhagavan balavat kvachit. Udgayati kvachit mugdas.
Tadvasho daru yantravat.
Tadvasho daru yantravat. Gopi bhikshu bito dvityad. Bhagavan balavat kvachit. Udgayati kvachit mugdas. Tadvasho daru yantravat. Gopi bihi.
By the gopis.
By flattery and offers of praise. I'm sorry, no. By flattery and offer of prizes.
Stobitaha.
Encouraged. Induced.
Anvityat.
The small Krishna danced.
Bhagavan,
although he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Balavat,
exactly like a human child.
Kvachit,
sometimes.
Udgayati,
he would sing very loudly.
Kvachit,
sometimes.
Mugdaha,
being amazed.
Tatvashaha,
under their control.
Daru yantravat,
like a wooden doll. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. The gopis would say, if you dance, my dear Krishna, then I shall give you half a sweetmeat. By saying these words or by clapping their hands, all the gopis encouraged Krishna in different ways. At such times, although he was the supremely powerful personality of Godhead, he would smile and dance according to their desire, as if he were a wooden doll in their hands. Sometimes he would sing very loudly at their bidding. In this way, Krishna came completely under the control of the gopis. There's no purport. I'll read the next two verses. Bibharti kvachit agyapta pita kormana paduka bahukshepam chakurute swanam cha pritimavahan. Sometimes Mother Yashoda and her gopi friends would tell Krishna, bring this article, or bring that article. Sometimes they would order him to bring a wooden plank, wooden shoes, or wooden measuring pot. And Krishna, when thus ordered by the mothers, would try to bring them. Sometimes, however, as if unable to raise these things, he would touch them and stand there. Just to invite the pleasure of his relatives, he would strike his body with his arms to show that he had sufficient strength. Darshayam tadvidam loka atmano vritya vashyatam vajasyod vaha vaiharsham bhagavan bala cheshtitaihi. To pure devotees throughout the world, who could understand his activities, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, exhibited how much he can be subdued by his devotees, his servants. In this way, he increased the pleasure of the Vrajavasis by his childhood activities. Purport, that Krishna performed childhood activities to increase the pleasure of his devotees was another transcendental humor. He exhibited these activities not only to the inhabitants of Vrajabhumi, but also to others who were captivated by his external potency and opulence. Both the internal devotees, who were simply absorbed in love of Krishna, and the external devotees, who were captivated by his unlimited potency, were informed of Krishna's desire to be submissive to his servants. Bhajateta drishi krida yakshut va tatparobhavit. Krishna performs wonderful activities. He's not only very powerful, he's not just a tyrant. People will obey a strong leader out of fear. He doesn't have to attract them with his loving qualities. He has an army, they have guns, and they can do harm to people who don't obey. And that's the basis of obedience. Either that gross or more subtle. That's basically the basis of obedience in the material world. Even many families, they raise their children to obey because of fear. This is one technique of raising children. And it's the way that governments keep their citizens under control. And people think that this is how God keeps us under control. The concept of fear of God. God is also another tyrant, like my father, like my government. And then there's the Supreme Father, the Supreme Government, God, and he's the supreme tyrant. And we should obey him because if we don't, he'll destroy us. He'll do harm to us. He'll turn my wife into a pillar of salt, burn my city, and kick me out into the wilderness if I don't obey. And even Krishna says things in the Gita that sound as if it's confirming that. Bhoktaram yogatapasam sarva loka maheshwaram. I am the ruler of all the worlds. Everyone's working for me. I'm the enjoyer. I'm the proprietor. Everyone has to submit to me. Out of context, because the next line says, Suridam sarva bhutanam. He's the best well-wishing friend of everybody. The first two lines are not the talk of a well-wishing friend, but of a tyrant. But Krishna is not a tyrant. You may want to think of God like that, but that's your problem. That's not how God intends to relate to you. It is an immature relationship with God to obey him out of fear. That is immature religion. At least it's some kind of religion. It's better than not obeying God at all. But it's not the real reason to obey God, because he's so terrible and he can do harm to you if you don't obey. Rather, Krishna, sometimes God appears in such forms. The Almighty Jehovah, or Lord Nrsimhadev, and he makes a person submit out of fear. Or if they won't submit, he rips them to shreds. Or burns their cities down and turns their wives into pillars of salt. And God can appear like that to reciprocate with that perverted or that immature mood of, if you want to call it devotion, love, you know, fear of God. But it's not the preferred mode of reciprocation for God or for their devotees who know him better. And Krishna, the original form of Godhead, is especially for the devotees who can understand him fully, who can actually deal with him as a person, not just as a mighty rock or a terrible force or the supreme ruler and judge or the bread baker, order supplier, you know, has to stay all night, every night, 3 o'clock to 3 o'clock in the morning, baking bread so he can deliver everyone's daily bread. There are various strange concepts of God. And God will reciprocate with those concepts and act those roles, but it's not his preferred role, and neither do his better devotees prefer to reciprocate with him in those modes. Krishna, as he appeared, especially in Vrajadham, has a very special way of reciprocating with devotees. It's very intimate. It's very obliging. The neighbors, they're just the neighbor ladies. They're not necessarily anything special to Krishna, just the ladies next door. But they can make him dance to suit to their whims just by offering him half a sweetmeat. Half of, you know, what is half of a para cost? 50 pais? You know, it's pretty cheap to buy God. And he'll dance for you for 50 pais. Maybe with some other more nice sweet, but still, half of a sweet. And a little bit of cajoling, and Krishna will dance for you. Supreme Lord, that Shukadeva is making sure we understand that. He's not an ordinary boy. And some bag of mucus is not a good substitute for Krishna. You may want to have your own son. That's okay. But it's not a good substitute for Krishna. And don't think that your child is Krishna. That's foolishness. Krishna is a very special child. And the relationship that Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj have with Krishna is not the same as your relationship with your bag of mucus. It's different. Krishna's loving relationships with his devotees in Vraja is very special. Special because, for many reasons, it's all supremely attractive, supremely ecstatic. All good qualities are shown. All good personal qualities. Selflessness, compassion, eagerness, all these good qualities are shown in Krishna's Leela. Krishna's Vrajalila, to the fullest extent. Life is lived to the fullest extent and in the most natural, pure form, in Vrajadham. This is the place where people really live. They think they're living in Zurich, New York, and Las Vegas, but they're not living. They're miserable, living corrupted, constricted lives with very small horizons. This is not real life. Real life is life lived in Vrajadham, shared among Krishna and his devotees. This is real enjoyable life, fulfilling life. So Krishna, among other his countless great qualities, that even the Lord of Vaikuntha, although I don't mean to be disrespectful, even the Lord of Vaikuntha doesn't have all these qualities. Among those special qualities of Krishna is his magnanimity that he wants to share. He's not exclusive and selfish, that he's only for his immediate family and friends. Immediate family and friends get special attention, and they enjoy special ecstasy. These are what Prabhupada calls in this purport the internal devotees. And then he talks about other devotees, the external devotees. And then he characterizes the external devotees. that they're captivated by his unlimited potency. Now that can mean various, that means more than one thing. That means some of the devotees are in Maya. They're neophytes and they've got one foot in the material mud. You know, still stuck in Maya. But it also means there are the devotees of Vaikuntha and even of Dwarka who are captivated by Krishna's Aishwarya. It's purely spiritual, but it's his other aspect, his majesty and his power. And they're captivated by that. They're not an illusion, but they're not in the mood of Raja. That's a different mood. They're also in the category of one subcategory of external devotees, relatively speaking, captivated by his unlimited potency, not just material potency, but spiritual potency also. If I'm right, if that's what Prabhupada intends to mean here. Of course, everyone's captivated. It's not that the Vrajabhasis are independent. Nobody's independent. Ekala Ishvara Krishna Arsho Britya. Krishna is the only independent Lord. Everybody else is a servant. The Vrajabhasis are also servants. They're also captivated. They're also dasas, slaves. But they're slaves to Yogamaya. They're slaves to Madhurya, the sweetness of Krishna, his all-attractive sweetness. They don't care so much about his power and opulence, and even that the fact that he is God. They don't care that much about that. So Krishna is so generous that he's not there just for his immediate family and friends. But the external devotees also, these external devotees, two categories of external devotees, the Vaikuntha devotees and the neophyte materialistic devotees. They also get to share in the ecstasy of Krishna's pastimes, vicariously. They're not fit to directly enter and directly participate in those pastimes, but by hearing about Krishna's pastimes, they make great spiritual advancement and enjoy much more bliss than they would otherwise, no matter what they did. They can do all the puja in the world, they can do all the austerities and vows, but if they don't listen to Krishna Leela, they're not going to get the real nectar. They'll become liberated and they'll enjoy some sort of bliss, but if you don't hear Krishna's pastimes, you don't get the highest bliss. Bhajate tadrishik krida yakshutva tatparobhavet. Krishna comes and performs such wonderful pastimes that one becomes attracted to him. Specifically to Krishna. This is the most prized, Prabhupada used the word prize, that the gopis are trying to entice Krishna with prizes, like half a sweet ball. Here's a prize. If you sing and dance for us, we'll give you this prize. So, what prize are we after? Some of us are after sweet balls. Some of us are after power, or love, or, you know, just relief from our headaches. We have different motivations. But the real prize is to gain attraction to Krishna's Leela. We're indifferent, more or less, to Krishna's Leela. We'd rather spend our time gossiping or even finding fault with Vaishnavas and complaining, making politics, or just gossiping, or just going to sleep, or playing video games, or something else. Mostly we're not so much interested, unfortunately, in Krishna Leela, in hearing about it, in chanting it. Aitadrishi tava kripa bhagavan mamapi durdhaivam idvisham ihajani nanuragaha. You're so merciful to provide this katha, but I'm so unfortunate, I have no attraction to it. That is the stage which we may be at. Maybe we're beyond that. Maybe some of us have attained ruchi or asakti, you know, attraction to Krishna consciousness. There's two levels. I think they're called ruchi and asakti. After nishta, real development of devotional, of loving ecstasy. But it begins with attraction and then to an attachment. And what the difference is first of all you become attracted to the process, to Krishna consciousness. And then you become attracted to the person Krishna. That's more advanced. First you get a taste for the serving Krishna and hearing about Krishna, and eating Krishna's prasadam and hearing about Krishna. Now, of course, we are coming with our material attractions. I like to eat. Everybody likes to eat. So we dovetail that with eating Krishna prasadam. But the person who has ruchi, he likes Krishna prasadam. Even if it's raw and tasteless, he doesn't judge it by that. It's Krishna's prasadam, and that's what he likes. Doesn't discriminate on material basis. That's ruchi. You're attracted to everything. You're attracted to the process of serving Krishna. But beyond, the next step is to be attracted to Krishna himself. That's asakti. That leads into bhava, into real ecstasies. So that's the prize. Attraction to Krishna consciousness and then to Krishna himself. That taste. Being allowed or being somehow having that taste awaken in your heart. That's the real prize. That's what we should be striving for. But it's such a subtle thing. It's just a taste in the heart. You know, there's no certificate. There's no, you can't deposit it in your bank account. How do you hold on to it? It's so subtle. It can slip away. This taste for hearing and chanting about Krishna. All I have to do is commit some aparads, neglect my sadhana, and I lose the taste. It's a subtle thing. It's hard to hold on to if you're not careful. We have to hold on to it. You know, just like someone gives you a big pile of money, you've got to be careful with it, not to lose it, not to let anybody steal it. You're walking around with a lot of cash. You have to hold on to it very carefully. Like that, we have to hold on to this, whatever attraction we've developed, we have to hold on to it very carefully. Don't let it slip out of our hands. Don't let Maya steal it. Until we can deposit it safely, then we develop solid attraction, and we advance to the higher stages of devotional service. Whatever little taste we have now, we have to preserve and protect. We don't want to lose it. It's the real prize. Attraction to hearing about Krishna. Most of us are still external devotees. We're vulnerable to the influence of Maya. We have to be careful. We have the opportunity to actually become attracted to hearing about Krishna. We have to be very eager to get that. And when we get some of it, we have to hold on to it very carefully, cultivate it, and keep away the weeds. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that was instructions to Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami about the creeper of devotion. Sanatana Goswami. It's a metaphor. It's a metaphor. It's not literally, creepers are parasites. They live off of trees, some of them. So it's not literal, to be taken literally. It's a metaphor. Well, there's a story of Jack and the Beanstalk. He planted some beans and a giant, creeper grew up into the sky. And he climbed it up and found a demon. Fee, fi, fo, fum, I smell the blood of an Englishman. And he killed the demon and I don't know what else, married the princess. And, fairy tale. But that metaphor is also given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu of this beanstalk or creeper of devotional service. It's planted in the heart, or it's in the heart, but it's wakened up by the mercy of Super Soul and Guru. And we have to water that seed by our sadhana, by our hearing, chanting, and other practices. And we have to, as a gardener, we have to watch out for weeds and pull them out. Anartas, aparadas that can destroy the creeper. Jiva Goswami, in Bhakti Sandarbha, explains what happens when we commit aparads. This is Madhurya Kadambini of Vishnu Chakravarti. That aparads are dangerous, offenses. because they will downgrade your devotional service. Whatever stage you're at, it'll push you down to the next lower stage, serious aparads. And more, if you commit more of them and egregious, serious aparads, then it will push you down several grades. And you can lose your contact with devotional service. Your devotional creeper can die if you commit too many aparads and too serious aparads. Offenses against devotees, offenses against Krishna, neglect of the sadhana we've been given by Krishna's mercy and the mercy of Guru. So we don't want to do that. Our devotional creeper is tender and vulnerable. We have to protect it. We have to make sure that it's not damaged or even destroyed by foolish and neglectful behavior. Sounds scary, but this means we have to be careful. You know, you're living in a big city. It's a dangerous place, but you learn how to live there. And you've been living there all your life in New York City or Chicago, where you can walk out in the street, get mugged, get murdered, daily occurrences. But you live your life anyway. You learn how to live in the dangerous city. You know, and you're not always terrified. It's just city life. You're used to it. Like that, we have to learn how to live in the world of, you know, the real world. Devotional service, you know, we were babies in the beginning, and Krishna gave us special protection. But now we're supposed to be growing up, and we have to face the real world. We're trying to practice devotional service in a hostile environment, the material world. And there are all sorts of bad influences that are trying to destroy that devotional service. Well, to speak of that's externally. Internally, we got demons in our own mind, in our own hearts, that are trying to pull us down. So therefore, it's just real life. We have to be honest or realistic and beware of the dangers and be careful and protect our attraction to Krishna. And cultivate it, but also protect it from weeds. That's the metaphor. Water the plant, but also be careful about pulling out weeds. Find the weeds and pull them out. Find them. Don't be oblivious to your condition. Be realistic. Be honest with yourself. Look in the mirror. See your own faults. Everyone else can see them. Why can't you see them? Now, find your faults. Pluck them out. Get rid of the anartas. Anarta nivritti. That's the stage that most of us are on now. We've been engaged in devotional service. We got our diksha. We know what the practice is. We know so much philosophy. But we've got still dirt in our heart that has to be eliminated. Bad habits, bad attitudes. Okay, Krishna accepts us as we are. He's very compassionate. But we're trying to become perfect. We're trying to become real devotees of Krishna. For that, we have to work hard in this process of anartha nivritti, eliminating the disqualifications. First, identify them. First, look at yourself and see what's wrong. Or ask your guru, or ask any devotee who knows you well. Please, tell me what my faults are. I don't want to be flattered. I want to know what I need to work on. Ask for that. Ask your guru, ask your godbrothers to please critique you honestly and help you find those faults. Find them first and then pull them out. Hard work. But that is how we get from this stage we're on now and progress into the perfect advanced stages of devotional service. Then we can get the full benefit of hearing and chanting about Krishna, and we can eventually become elevated to the category of internal devotees. Then our life is perfect. So any questions or comments? Yes, sir.
Thank you very much for this last point about how we should improve our faults and not commit offenses. One devotee, I've been receiving emails from him. He's been sending lots of emails to many people, and he has a very, seems like, harsh attitude.
Yes.
About some certain things that are happening.
Yes.
And we just, I mean, I've just been deleting his emails every time I see his name because he's a little bit, I feel a little bit offensive in this language.
Okay.
And what do you do to help such a person?
I don't know. And we have lots of people like that. The basic problem is blaming everybody else and not seeing any fault in themselves. This is a very common disease in material life. You know, it's everybody else's fault but your own. And that's not our siddhanta. What we're supposed to think in order to make good progress, punjena eva atmakritam vibhagam. We should think that we're suffering the reactions of our own past misdeeds. Not that we're suffering because of everybody else's misdeeds. That's not the philosophy. Because karma is complex. You know, we abuse one another and we abuse ourselves at the same time. So we could identify other people's misdeeds and figure out ways in which they're the reason for our suffering. But it's not the right attitude for making advancement. By doing that, you can make advancement in anger and frustration. That's your advancement that you achieve by the sadhana of picking out everyone else's faults. They're there. Everyone's got faults. And everybody's, you know, doing violence to one another. And you can go out and identify it, a crow in the garbage heap, picking out the garbage. Well, what you get is anger and frustration. That's your reward. And you don't get advancement devotional service. Actually, you do harm to your devotional creeper by that. What do you do about such a devotee? How do you help him? I don't know.
Especially when he's senior.
And he's senior, and he's on a trip, and it is hard to get him off of it. Try to explain to him the basic problem here, is that you're seeing the fault in everybody else. It's not our philosophy. It's not our practice. You know, to make advancement in Krishna consciousness by finding everybody else's faults. That's not the process.
As a junior, how do you
well, yeah, but you may have to, but do it very, very politely. Even if it's your guru, if he's having that kind of trouble, you should help him. I'm not saying anybody's guru has that problem, but that's instruction, that advice is there from Krishna Bhajanamrita. The disciple, if he sees some serious fault in the guru, he should tactfully talk to the guru, not just let everything slide. What does it mean, a godbrother? Senior godbrother, okay. But our first priority is not etiquette. Our first priority is go back to Godhead. Etiquette, or let etiquette go to hell just to save one another. Sure. But you have to be respectful and polite. And try to say something that the person will accept. I agree with you.
There are different types of copies.
Yes.
Namisharanya.
Oh, Naimasharanya gopis? Oh, who were Rishi Kanyas. Okay.
Brahmana Patnis. So now we're listening about the gopis, those who are telling Krishna will repeat half of fruit.
Yes.
Which type of gopis?
This is a mixed group of gopis, but they're older gopis. These are gopis in Vatsalya Rasa. Older gopis. But they're coming from all the categories. Oh, I don't know. Maybe not.
Because the descriptions of Madhurya Rasa.
Yeah. Okay, so maybe these Vatsalya Rasa gopis, okay, they don't necessarily come from the same origins. But I don't know. I don't know where they come from. But remember, this is different. The word is gopi, but there's gopis who are in Vatsalya Rasa and gopis who are in Madhurya Rasa, and they're different. Not only because some of them are older than the other. The rasa is different. The mood is different.
We consider those who are elder, they are Vatsalya Rasa. Elder.
Generally, yes. generally. We don't hear about, 50-year-old gopis in the Rasa Leela. Yes?
How is it after identifying your anarthas? I mean, what do you do then?
Well, there's...
Can you particularly focus on this, or... I don't know.
Well, focus, but not become obsessed. You know, it's not just, be entangled in negative thought and worry. You got to do something practical. Something that can be accomplished, and something, without going through torture. It's not that you should punish yourself, torture yourself by worrying. Our business is not to worry. Our business is to get our business, to do something practical. So it depends on what's the anartha. We should take help from others. First thing is admit it to yourself. Find it and admit it. Second thing is to go to others, other devotees, and talk about it. Share it. Share your problem with others. Get support. Get guidance. Even from godbrothers. Even from junior godbrothers. If you hide it out of embarrassment, if you hide your anarthas, then you can't get help from others. And that's sometimes the cause of fall down. Sincere devotees, but they got some anartha and they never share it with anybody. And they just slide down over a course of years. It just eats them, eats out their heart, and it rots. And if they had shared it with other devotees, they could have been saved. So the second thing is to consult with other devotees. Maybe guru, maybe senior godbrother, maybe any godbrother, anybody. Share your problems and take guidance. That's the second step. Then it can be discussed what to do. Practical steps can be discussed. But when you have somebody to talk to, then you can figure things out. If it's a simple thing, I have a bad habit, I got to give it up. Maybe you can deal with it by yourself. If you're making good advancement and you've got some willpower, maybe you don't have to bother anybody about it. Simple thing, you just stop doing it. But if you have problems stopping to do it, then you should take help. Bart,
a couple things to say. One, just regarding this, same thing as you said. Admit it to others. I've heard.
Not just to confess, but to get help.
Yes, to get help. So I heard that half the anartha is resolved when you declare it to others that I'm God as an anartha.
Oh, 50%.
Yes.
Okay, how do you get rid of the second 50%? Okay.
And one more thing. Because I want this sadhana. So initially there's some dope tailing that we like to eat.
Yes.
One incident I remember when His Holiness Bhakti Vikas Maharaj, he had asked a set of devotees, can you just share your realizations? So many people had so many things to say. They said, in their devotional service. And one devotee said, I like prasadam very much. So he said, he thought, he made a nice statement. But then immediately he said, well, if you like prasad, then you eat only prasad. But it hit that guy. This person, he liked prasad. And that's why he mainly came to the program.
Right.
But then he was taken shock, because he ate even other things outside. But he liked prasad. So, he said, if you like prasad, then you eat only prasad. So then that was shocking to that person.
That's what he has to do. That's the next step for him. For him, the next step is don't eat garbage. Yes?
Yeah, other instances when there were some very great devotees who when they were served prasad, which was poison, with the intention to kill them. Mm-hmm. But then they would ask when that prasad was being served, their hand would start trembling, and then the person would ask, why is the hand trembling? And he would say, well, I'm very sorry, the intention was to kill you by somebody, so I was bribed him. This was done.
Oh.
But you should not take this up. I'm not served this to you. I'm sorry. So he said, so they asked.
He confessed.
But then he asked, did you offer this to the Lord? So then he said, yes, I offered it to the Lord.
So they ate it?
Yeah, so what did you offer it to the Lord? You offered it to the Lord to poison him or to feed him? So I said, to feed him. Okay, then you feed me, that's prasad. So, and they used to eat it, but many devotees won't be able to act on that platform. This was speaking about Vyasadeva.
Yes.
Doing that.
Vyasadeva.
So, but many of us won't be able to do that. So what? And then again, this not etiquette. It's more than etiquette to just take prasad. So what should devotees do who are not able to act on that platform, like who don't have that much tamas to? And then he spent the whole night just singing for the Lord, trying to pacify him for having fed him prasad. And then what happened is, by eating that poison, he became more effulgent than before. Just by eating that poison.
So the question there, what
should devotees who are not able, who are not on that power of hands? Because there's another concern.
Okay, so that
taking prasad is, I'll reject this, I'll not take this, no, even this is prasad. And because if I remain alive by avoiding this poison, I may be able to serve better. So,
well, the devotees who still have a material taste and don't have, Mahaprasadi Govindam, Govinde, very strong attraction to prasadam as prasadam, then they should dovetail very enthusiastically. They should take all the prasadam they can get and avoid eating anything else. And try not to be offensive to prasadam by saying, I don't like this prasadam. Try never to think such a thing. Of course, if you know it's poison, or someone, who has typhoid fever spit in it, then you have to protect yourself, because you're not on the transcendental platform. You're not ready to eat poison. But apart from that, taking reasonable precautions, you should not be offensive against prasadam by rejecting it. I don't like it. It doesn't taste good. Avoid. Don't even think that. That's your practice. Stop offenses against prasadam. Honor prasadam and stop offending it. Practice that. That's what that devotee should do. Don't avoid prasadam. Don't offend prasadam. Dovetail all the prasadam you can get and cultivate your appreciation for prasadam. At least it's something nice. It's not some terrible austerity that we have to eat prasadam. Horrible practice of stuffing yourself with prasadam. And then Madan Mahaprabhu?
There are six kinds of anarthas described in Bhaktivinoda Thakura.
Yes.
I read that somewhere, that the point about them is that they disguise a devotional service as a creeper also. So one misses the point and watches them instead, thinking them to be devotional service.
Yes.
So lava, puja, pratishta, okay, this is clear. One may think, I'm getting so much responsibility, this is for Krishna and I'm doing it.
Yes.
But actually he is nourishing his own desire for power.
Or he's thinking, only the best is good enough for Krishna. And then he extends the logic, and only the best is good enough for me. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So, but there are other, like, kutinati, nishidachar, and diplomacy, or forbidden behavior.
Yes.
Like, so how those can be disguised as devotion?
Because I'm thinking I'm on a mission to save Prabhupada's movement by finding fault with all the devotees. you think you're working to serve and save Prabhupada's movement by getting into a cesspool of fault finding. Things like that. And deception. I think by being duplicitous, I'm being tactful. This is my way of dealing with people. Speaking nicely, telling them all sorts of lies, and that's how I'm supposed to, you think that's the way you're supposed to behave in devotional service. That's how things are done. Lie, deceive, be duplicitous. That's delusion. That's not devotional service. Not the way to behave with Vaishnavas, to lie and cheat. But sometimes devotees think like that. They think this is how you're supposed to get along in this world, including in devotional service. Lie, cheat, say any damn thing, get people to do what you want them to do. But Madan Mohan Prabhu had something. Okay, I'm sorry, we got a queue. Yes.
At the same time, Prabhu gave him advice that every devotee should be attached with we are also all Kushtianandis. We are also liking him as all the devotees.
Yes.
So sometimes it happens that we are also attached with all the devotees.
Yes.
And sometimes relations should be existed between the devotees so that we can attach simultaneously with the Krishna.
No, no, we should take advantage of the opportunity to become attached to devotees as the best way to become attached to Krishna. The devotees are Krishna's representatives. You know, when we see a Vaishnava, when we see the tilak on his face and hear the words out of his mouth, that should remind us about Krishna. That should help us better establish our relationship with Krishna. Should. We have to be careful that we associate with our God brothers in a spiritual way, not a material way. Not based on material sentiment and material enjoyment, but based on actual Krishna consciousness. We develop real spiritual relationships with devotees, not material relationships. Then, that's the best way to develop our relationship and become attracted to Krishna. But not if we deal with each other materially. We sit, you know, exploiting, ganging together to fight among, you know, one clique against another. Or just indulging in gossip, in sense gratification, you know, in the name of association with devotees. It should be spiritual association. Then, that's not contrary to becoming attached to devotees will help you become attached to Krishna, if it's spiritual association. Okay? Yeah. Yes. Madan Mahaprabhu? Oh. Maybe we don't theoretically, but maybe 2 minutes.
Just continue the point which you just explained. Guru Maharaj oftentimes tells us that you can only see your relations with Krishna the way you deal with Krishna and how much you love him by attention to two things, to the holy name of the devotees.
Holy name and devotees.
As much as that, no more than less.
Yes.
This is
significant. If we're not sufficiently attached to devotees, if we're not sufficiently attached to Krishna's names, then we can't pretend that we're attached to Krishna.
And that's
yeah.
Kind of
yes.
Engaged.
Yes.
I'll ask you about your statement in the fifth chapter, that one can see he's an artist in the heart, exactly the same way as one can see the kind of Rahu. Rahu is visible only on the background of the sun and blocks of the moon. In the same way, one can only see the anarthas on the background of one's devotional service.
We see a hole in our devotional service. Yeah. We know there's an anartha there.
If it's not your devotional service, there is no anarthas. In other words,
yeah.
it might be comforting to think this way. But also, does it mean that, for instance, if we don't see anarthas in our hearts, then it means that we don't really engage properly in devotional service?
Yeah, we're not fully properly engaging in devotional service if we can't see our own anarthas. Because maybe you don't have any.
Yeah, that's
but that's unlikely, and you can always find something, some small thing. You know, there's always something. You know, just like, you know, you may think you're healthy, but what about your aching knee and your this and that and your snot in your nose? And we always got something wrong with us. Physically, and also we all have, if you dig deep enough, there's plenty of anarthas you can find. If you're not seeing them, then something very serious is deficient in your devotional service. You're not introspective. That's part of practicing devotional service. You have to do it thoughtfully, with introspection. And if you do it thoughtlessly, without introspection, that's not proper devotional service. It may be otherwise proper. You may be doing some other things right, but that's an important element of devotional service that's missing. If you're not looking at yourself introspectively, it's supposed to be thoughtful and introspective devotional service, not just run around frenetically. You know, you got to look inside too.
And that's a question related to that. What you just explained, Rupa Goswami, I think, in the next devotion, he explains that there are different kinds of activities which may be beneficial for devotional service, but which are not devotional service in themselves.
Yes.
One of them is developing good qualities. In other words, you know, such qualities as tolerance, sincerity, mind control. So the question is, if we are supposed to develop those good qualities and fight our anarthas, how do we do it
such a way, does it become an end in itself, in itself?
Well, the thing is, you can't. It's something that isn't really done intentionally. You know, I got my list of good qualities, and I'm going to make this move and that move to get this. You know, it's not an external thing. But you can't manipulate yourself into good qualities. You know, it's not a matter of just doing the right thing. It's a matter of the heart, deep in the heart. So you can't just do it intentionally, you know, and mechanically. Anyway, it doesn't work that way. And we should be working on, you know, on our real priorities. Satisfying Krishna, satisfying our guru, stopping our nonsense. There's plenty of, some of our anarthas are hard to discover, but I'm sure we all know the major anarthas that we have as individuals. They're no secret to us and to everybody else. Yeah. And if you don't know because you're so deluded, just ask any of your friends, what are my anarthas? Anybody can tell you. I don't mean you, in general. So, I'm sorry. Yeah, okay. Now we stop. Thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.
Да, то есть...
и пример предосточительный. Больше радует, предмет меньше. В какой-то степени гьян. Для начальных
например,
когда
осознать
себя чистым телом, это тоже является частью этого.
Понятно, что
понятно,
что
это
я, это чистое тело.
Да,
но
наша
модальность,
то есть начиная
чистки
зубов
и все. А что это, что было, когда ты другого занимаешь? То есть, когда ты получаешь это отношение, то ты не можешь, ты занимаешь это, а ты его получаешь, ты его получаешь, все это уже не
классификация, насколько я знаю, она относится к Рагануме. Это в одном из комментариев.
Это просто не является.
Нет, вот, да, вот все действия, которые сами по себе являются, которые способствуют, нейтральные, которые могут нет, и потом запреты. В оригинале эта классификация, она, насколько я читал, к Рагануме. И потом, ну, конечно, используя ту же самую логику, кто-то объяснил всю эту систему на все это, он наложил эту транспаренцию на лист Вайди Бхакти, и тогда все. Что у меня было это? Это, по-моему, комментарий Вишна Чакраварти
да.
На Бхактистану
Пасиму.
Синдубинду.
Там и все пишется. Это как пример, например, когда Рупа Госвами говорит, что
living entities, which are manifested as different species of life. He does not have to endeavor for his maintenance, because he is the master of all mystic powers and the proprietor of everything. Thus he is distinct from the living entities. You may narrate also about the auspicious characteristics of the Lord in his different incarnations for the welfare of the twice-born, the cows, and the demigods. Our minds are never satisfied completely, although we continuously hear of his transcendental activities. The Supreme King of all kings has created different planets and places of habitation, where living entities are situated in terms of the modes of nature and work, and he has created their different kings and rulers. O chief amongst the Brahmins, please also describe how Narayan, the creator of the universe and the self-sufficient Lord, has differently created the natures, activities, forms, features, and names of the different living creatures. O my Lord, I have repeatedly heard about these higher and lower statuses of human society from the mouth of Vyasadeva, and I am quite satiated with all these lesser subject matters and their happiness. They have not satisfied me with the nectar of topics about Krishna. Who in human society can be satisfied without hearing sufficient talk of the Lord, whose lotus feet are the sum total of all places of pilgrimage, and who is worshipped by great sages and devotees? Such topics can cut off one's bondage to family affection simply by entering the holes of one's ears. Your friend, the great sage Krishna Dwaipayana Vyas, has already described the transcendental qualities of the Lord in his great work, the Mahabharata. But the whole idea is to draw the attention of the mass of people to Krishna Katha or Bhagavad Gita through their strong affinity for hearing mundane topics. For one who is anxious to engage constantly in hearing such topics, Krishna Katha gradually increases his indifference towards all other things. Such constant remembrance of the lotus feet of